Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, musician, technologist, and entrepreneur, Scott Page.
Hello.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Thomas Claxton. I am Mark Leisure, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I've always felt personally that musicians have a special view of the world, and by view of the world, I mean by way of their art, their music, their connection with spirit or source or whatever they feel the music is coming from. I also mean view of the world from literally where they're standing. Like they're, especially the ones who get to perform, they get to stand in front of an audience. Like if you think about it, not all jobs do people hover around you. Maybe a boss sometimes will hover around the accountant or the manager, but people don't usually stand in front of a large group of people and count numbers or spreadsheets or maybe give presentations. But a performer, and not only are they standing in front of the audience giving, let's say, a presentation, but they're sharing something of themselves that maybe other people don't know, or they're sharing a feeling that is going to get imparted to other people. People might cry, people might laugh, people might drink, people might talk. There is so much going on that a musician gets to experience. So that's a musician, that's a performer. Now add to that someone who gets to do it on a level where they're standing in front of, well, the world. Like when you have a legendary band like Pink Floyd, like standing in front of the world. And add to that somebody, our guest is an example, who I don't think there's, I don't know if there's anybody else like this who has done this not once, but twice, but not even twice, three times, Supertramp. Add to that Toto, and actually so many other known and stars in this industry. So, you know, that person knows something. I actually think it's something that most people wouldn't be able to handle. But you know that if somebody can handle it and somebody has a way of channeling it, that something special is going to come through. And I expected something special, but when we had a chance to chat, boy, did he go deep right away. And I'm glad we have the honor and opportunity to share what Scott Page has to share with the world today, and a little later on what Thomas Claxton is going to share with his music here on the Life Changes Show.
I'm so excited for tonight's show. I had the blessing of producing or being part of the production team of an event many years ago, and that's when I first met Scott. And for all that you just said, Filippo, I think the amazing thing and my excitement to hear from him tonight is that there's so much more to what he brings to the world, what he brings to innovation, the way he's always seen the future, his giant heart, and it's going to be a fantastic conversation.
Decentralizing the experience of life with Scott Page. This is our episode 816, and we're featuring a man who is a technologist. He's an entrepreneur and a musician recognized as a saxophonist and guitarist for Pink Floyd, Supertramp, and Toto, as I mentioned. Welcome, Scott Page, to the Life Changes Show.
Whoa. First of all, wow. I got to say, that intro, that was, I brought tears to my eyes. That was so kind of you to That was like, I don't think I've had an intro like that that I can remember ever. That was fantastic. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Scott.
I'm excited to be here, actually, because Brother Mark, who I got to meet before, we hit it off a while ago when we were working. It was that, I think it was Wisdom, where we did all those shows in that 360 degree immersive dome together. And that was crazy, crazy. I mean, that whole immersive thing, that's where we had this love of immersive and experiential based entertainment. And that's how we became friends through this. So I'm very happy to be on this today, having a conversation and now meeting Philippa for the first time too. We had a great little conversation. So this will be fun. We're going to have a good time on this one.
Thank you, Scott. And, you know, actually I don't want to rag on any show. And I actually like the Lawrence Welk show, but for some people, that's like the epitome of uncool, where today for most people, Pink Floyd is the epitome of uber cool. So you've played the gamut, I imagine.
Think about it. I'm the only guy in the world that has actually played on Lawrence Welk and Pink Floyd. That's my claim to fame, right? Yeah. Yeah, my dad, I grew up on that television show. My dad was in that band for 15 years, and that was my childhood, was, you know, remembering, you know, every year they got a Dodge car because Dodge was the, you know, the sponsor. And so they had a Dodge. And I remember one year they got Dodges and they were all the same color for everybody in the band. And I just remember every trying to find your car when they parked in the parking lot when they were working out of, you know, the beach down there at in Santa Monica. So, yeah, had a lot of great times back in those days. Learned a lot about art and music, you know, and really a serial entrepreneurship. My father was a serial entrepreneur. We had lighting business, candy business, boat business. We had 26 donut shops at one time. We had, my father was one of the co-inventors of the wah-wah pedal with Brad Plunkett over there during the days of, you know, the famous guitar pedal, and also was the original, started the company, really started the early days, Sound City, the very famous recordings here. So I had a gamut of growing up around being an entrepreneur and also being around music all my life. And it's funny, I didn't really want to be in music until I got in this band. I played in the bands for fun through school, because my dad thought, "Why do you play music? It'll be good for you. You don't have to work in a gas station, go make a little money on the weekends and play." So I just did it for fun. Then I got in a band with Jeff Beccaro and David Page, the guys from Toto. And that changed my whole story. I all of a sudden became a musician. I was studying to be an architect at the time, before draftsman for a company at the time called Audiodyne, drawing exploded views of parts and crazy stuff like that. And I just realized music was where I needed to go. And we'd play all these bands, gigs with this band called Merciful Soul was the band with Jeff and those guys, which, you know, later became Toto, like I said. They took off, and I was still trying to study. I was a trumpet player at the time, right? I played trumpet. I'm actually a saxophone guitar player. Mostly I hadn't played trumpet in years, but during that time I played trumpet. But, you know, winning those Battle of the Bands, I noticed there were girls in the front row. And I said, music was for me. And so I became a musician, but still had the desire of entrepreneurship and building and, you know, thinking like that, you know, what it takes to build a company and what it takes to build business and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Scott, long before the famous Saturday Night Live, "We Need More Cowbell" line,
you had a
cowbell story of your own. Maybe that's where it came from.
Oh, yeah. So
maybe it came from you.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, yeah, actually, it was very interesting because, you know, my life, I've been a fanatic around metronomes, right? The concept of time and, you know, what it really feels like to lock in with, you know, the beat, right? And what makes certain things run and groove harder than other things. And so I was a fanatic in that. And I'll never forget, I got the call to go play after Toto took, when the kid band I was in, everybody took off. I was the guy behind, right? I didn't have the chops. I was a trumpet player. I wasn't that good at that time. So I really needed to study, right? So they took off. started doing all the shows, did the Steely Dan albums, all this stuff that started to happen, you know, Sonny and Cher show for Jeff, that'll happen. So always in the back of my mind, I got to work. And then finally I got the call one day after I was playing with Supertramp, and I got the call from those guys to come play with Toto. And I was like, oh, this would be great. That was like it's like a dream, you know, it was like this thing that was just drove me from the beginning when I was a kid, obviously, and they took off. And so that was my inspiration to get to that point where I could actually play, be recognized and play in that again. That was sort of always in the back of my mind. So I had this opportunity. So I'll never forget. So I'm like I spent 2 weeks, like, just, I got the call. I just ate, drink, sleep the music all day long. So make sure that I could walk in there. I knew exactly what I was going to do. It was going to be, I was going to nail it. I was going to have the music, everything figured out. Right. So all this week, I'm losing sleep. This whole thing's going down. And I'm all, because this was a big deal for me, because this goes back to my childhood and the whole thing besides just playing. Right. So I'll never forget. I go into the thing. I set up all my gear. I got all my setup, all this stuff I had there. And the first thing, said, okay, let's take the first tune. And Jeff handed me the cowbell, was the first thing. I didn't really even play. Right. He threw the cowbell at my head and then counted off the tune, and I had to play cowbell. And what was so good is afterwards he came over and put his arm around me, because that guy is one of the greatest grooves in history. I mean, that guy is one of the legendary players of all time. Right. Just like one of the gurus of drums, period. To this day, all the great players and everything. And he passed way too early. He would have been on thousands and thousands of records. He was the guy. And so to have him being a guy, because I was a student of the groove, right? I ate, drink, sleep, metronomes, man. I was all over. I had one of the first Lydon drum machines, you know, all this stuff. That was my whole thing. And so I had to pick up that cowbell and I had to rock. And so people always tell me, they say, what was the best thing about Toto? I said, oh my God, I got to play cowbell with Jeff Beccaro on four songs. There were four songs that I played cowbell on, right? And my riser was right next to him where he was. I was on the side. I could look right down. I was a little higher than he was. And I looked down. He'd be sitting there drumming, right? And I could feel, you know, the way he played the beat. There's just the backbeat, you know, two and four. Boom, tack, tack. That can be played zillions of ways, right? People don't know. Just two beats, right? Over and over and over. But where he laid the backbeat, each song would be a little different. Sometimes he'd put a little ahead, sometimes he'd put a little behind, sometimes he'd lay it in different places. And it was like, I tell people, man, I sit there and I get to play the lock with that guy. And it goes down to that. That really became kind of took you into the spiritual level, right? Because it was like I'd lock with him, lock eyes, and then we basically connect at the groove level. So that you could feel, I could feel the stick hitting that cowbell, sinking into the cowbell. You're not hitting it. You're freaking sinking into the cowbell, right? And once you got that lock together, where when that snare drum and that hi-hat and my freaking cowbell were locked, and you had Lenny Castro over there, it was better than sex. It was like the holy grail of vibe and feel,
the
right?
Cowbell.
It took you to another place. Oh, big time. No question. I mean, it was insane. So that's my cowbell story.
So Scott, I like to listen to interviews in the background while I'm working and that kind of stuff. So today I tried doing that with a few of your interviews, and I kept having to stop working and take notes for myself. I'm thinking, oh, this is good stuff. Oh, and not just for the interview. I mean, for life. And one of the things, I got a sense that you either love life or you're excited about life or you drink a lot of coffee.
Both. I still like coffee. I drink coffee in the morning usually, but look, this is such a gift. I mean, once you can stand back, and you know what I mean, to basically go into wide mode and really without any interruption of thinking about it, but really understand what's happening right now, you become in awe at a level that is so profound that makes you realize that everything around you is just this giant gift, and be thankful and grateful. And I'm telling you right now, there's nobody on this thing, nobody there that is as thankful and grateful as me. I guarantee you that, because it's all about the ride, right? We always have this conversation. I always end, and I always have it in every podcast, everything I ever do is I try to explain to everybody out there that the only thing that's real is us talking and you listening right now. That's it. 2 minutes ago when you were listening to me talk or listening to us talk, that's an illusion, right? There's no, it's not there. You can't touch it. You can't stand, you can't do anything. And once you start to stand above thought, where you watch thought, you start to realize how it all works, right? And how we make ourselves crazy by identifying with thinking. That's the suffering. And time is what hurts us the most. That's what we're always fighting, this thing called time, which is a total illusion. You blink, you're bored, you blink, you're dead. Next thing you know, you're 50 years old. You're laying there, you're going, huh, what happened? Next, boom, you blink again, you're on your deathbed, right? It just goes that fast. It's just a giant thing that just moves quickly. It moves so fast. Why do they always say it? But time is an illusion at the deepest sense. It's something we make up. It's always now. There's no, the now deepens. It just deepens, right? It deepens to where you move, but it's always now. Wherever you're standing, wherever it is, that's it. That's all that's real. That's the only thing you can affect. That's the only thing that has any real solid value. Now, all those other things in your head, yeah, that may be true in your head, but that's identified with thought. So here's the trick to help get out of that and flip that narrative where you flip from the thinker to the watcher. And this is what I did. You know, I hope somebody else picks it up and it makes sense to somebody else, because that's the beauty of all this. All this stuff are just pointers pointing to something that cannot be understood, but only known. So the trick, this one changed. Like, so I remember reading this book, right? First of all, I went through this period of time. Let me tell this real quick. I went through this period of time where I read The Power of Now. I went through a down period. I went through, I was thinking, finally met this friend, well, actually one of my best friends, hit me up and told me about this program that was called Insight that was going on in Santa Monica. And he talked me into it. And I was like, you know, it was one of those programs where they, you know, you throw you in the room, you're with 100 people and you're there for 3 or 4 or 5 days. And you walk out of there completely, they tore down, built up, and new look on life. I did that for my birthday. And, changed my life because it made me change the way I looked at things. And so I became a heavy, deep look, trying to find, you know, how does this all work? What's going on? I took this inward journey because I went so down so low, and that's a whole nother story, but it pulled me. It was the thing I needed at that time. And I became a fanatic of it, man. So I started reading, reading. So I remember I made a pact. I said, the Eckhart Tolle book really hit me right. The words worked for me. Everything worked. That's the thing about a lot of the different teachings, right? It's certain words, certain things will resonate with people, will make them go, aha. You get those aha moments, right? When certain things happen, right? So I forced myself into the car. I said, for 2 years, I'm going to listen to the Eckhart, read The Power of Now to me all for 2 years, and I'm going to read the book as many times as I could. In that period of time, I read the book about 60 times. Wow. So at that point, I thought I was a spiritual guru. You know, I thought I was feeling good. Life was good. I was smiling. Things were rocking. Everything was happening, man. I was there. And then April 9th, 10, 12 in the morning, 2011, I wake up and I go, holy shit, 50 years went by. How did that happen? Right? I'm looking at myself in the mirror. And I just had this sort of epiphany. Then all of a sudden I went, the voice that's inside me, that never changed. It was the same when I was 5. And it was same as this. And at that point, I realized time was an illusion. What happened was it was that moment when it changed from understanding the logic behind time being alluded to the point of what that concept is pointing to, right? It's not a word. You can't, there's no way to describe it. It's a pointer, right? And so at that moment, it all became clear at a level where there was nothing you could question, right? It was nothing to question. It was so obvious. Everything was so obvious. And so what was fascinating was I went to read the book again, the Eckhart book, and I swear I missed the entire book by about 180 degrees.
Mm.
I missed it. The words changed completely on that thing. That next time I read it, it was the strangest, trippiest thing. And then from that point, it goes on. And then what happens is what's so beautiful about all this is it. Then you start to take a different point of view. Oh, wait, I got to remember. I forgot I wanted to tell people the trick, right? Okay, so how do you get to this point to where you flip from being always identified with a thought to the point where you flip to become the watcher, right? The idea of where you're watching your thinking as opposed to being the thinking. And so I remember reading in this book that it said, as often as you can throughout the day, every time you can remember to do this, you can stand, stop where you are, put your attention, every ounce, every cell of your body, the attention of where you are at that moment. Like, look around, see everything. Like, right now, I'm standing in the middle of my living room, right? And I'm looking around, I'm seeing this thing, and then ask this question. What are you feeling right now? Are you feeling any anxiety, tension, or fear? If you're feeling any anxiety, tension, or fear, unless there's a lion chasing you, it proves that you're identified with thinking and not with reality, right? Every time you do that, you wake up a tiny sliver. It's like a little thing, it starts changing. So for me, I'll never forget the first night. I said, oh, okay, I'm gonna go do this. I'm gonna do it next day. I'm gonna get up. Next thing I know, I'm in bed the next night. I went, I was so asleep, I couldn't even ask that question once through the day. Right. I was so the movie in my head was more important than anything else. Right.
Mm.
And I couldn't even make that change. That was what was trippy about it. So the next day I went, oh, OK, I'm going to do it next day. Next day I did it maybe two or three times. Right. And I think, oh, that was more important. Right. You're basically waking up to identifying with reality is what's happening. You're stopping for just a second. Just what is really real right now is me standing in this room talking to you. Right. That's it. And so every time you do that, you start to go, And then finally, I was like, I could only do it a couple times a day. So I ended up putting stickers all around my house that said, wake up. Right. Wow. So I'd get up in the morning and I go open my coffee drawer and it goes, wake up. And at that moment, I'll stand there right. I'm standing there at my coffee cup and I'll put my attention. I'm in my kitchen. And I'm going to ask myself, what am I feeling? If I'm all anxious and I'm all freaked out, it's because I'm identified with a thought. And then you can go, oh, you can push that thought away because you now are separating from it. And what will happen is you're going to go back and forth. Some people it might happen quickly. Some people it may take more time, to take a long time, right? It's not the point. The point is the journey, right? You got to just keep stay on it and don't stop. That's the big part of this. You got to, it's a devotion. And if you do, that's okay. Because what's beautiful about it is as you stop, when you come back, it's like going home. Right. You don't forget. It's like, you can just fall back into that sense of peace. Right. Because that's the goal at the end of the day. Isn't it? It's inner peace. There's nothing more important than that in your entire life. It's that sense of peace. That's why the concept of dying before you die is so profound, because the whole idea is surrendering to what is. Right. That's the whole thing. And forgiveness and surrender are virtually the same thing, because you cannot surrender unless you forgive. You cannot forgive unless you surrender. It's a whole, you know, it's like it's a very interesting thing. But once these things, so back to the story. So as you keep doing that process, you'll start doing it more and more. And then it becomes more interesting, because all of a sudden you're all anxious, and all of a sudden you stop, you go things and you go, oh, I don't need to be anxious. Yeah, I've got that thing I need to deal with, but I don't have to have it consume me, right? It's like my stomach is in knots. I'm crazy. I'm going nuts, right?
Yeah.
No, you don't have to have that. The situation or the issue or the challenge is there. But what's really good is you start to take those challenges and you use those as a way to measure how your journey is going on the spiritual inward path. Because we go through this thing where you go up, you know, everything's good. I'm feeling great. And all of a sudden something goes wrong. Ah, crash. Now I'm down. Am I down a day, a week? 10 days, a month, what, you know, before I start coming up, and what triggers that, right? And then as you do this process, you start to, that starts to change, that wave starts to, you only go down a really short period of time and you're able to lift yourself out, right? And then you keep doing it. And then all of a sudden it gets flatter, that line gets flatter, right? You get upset and then you're like, oh, no problem, I'm okay, right? Next thing you know, boom, next thing it'll flatline. That day will come when it'll flatline. Oh,
talk about decentralizing the experience of life with Scott Page. You know, Scott, I'm listening to you share your wisdom, and I'm recalling how the indigenous people, or actually many, many cultures, have this feeling that long hair has extrasensory perception abilities. And I just wonder if a mullet has anything to do with your superpowers.
Ah, the mullet, man. Yeah, so, you know, that's one of the things I was pretty famous for. I was that fast guy that had this crazy mullet, right? And it's so funny. I was really looking at building a project that I'll talk about real quick in a second. But, and the guy said to me, he says, man, I searched your name and all everything about a mullet came up. Right? It's like, okay, great. So I thought that was so funny. But, you know, yeah. So what I did, which is interesting with the mullet, is I was really fortunate that I was picked of one of 222 artists that were able to put their works onto this special crazy hard drive that would last, it's designed to last a billion years. It's a massive 18-layer crazy process that was designed specifically for this, for storage, like long time storage, right? And it's part of a project called the Luna Prize Museum. And the Luna Prize Museum went up on the Falcon 9, Elon Musk Falcon 9. And then the lunar lander was called Odysseus that was on the Falcon 9 that then went and landed on the moon on February 22nd. It was the first time in supposedly 50 years anybody has been able to land on the moon like that happened. So I was very lucky that I was able to put my entire life story. I put 7,000 digital twins, basically, on the moon. And inside of that moon was all my never-before-seen Pink Floyd pictures, Toto, Supertramp. I had a business with the late, great, my brother, Mr. Quincy Jones, one of the great people that I knew in my life that was so instrumental, man. He taught me presence. The two guys that taught me the power of presence was Quincy Jones and John Helliwell from Supertramp. Those two guys were so instrumental for me in my life, right? That have been so instrumental because they triggered that, you know, okay, I get it, right? And yeah, so anyway, my moon projects, so I put that up there and, you know, all this stuff. The first time I met Lady Di, I put the original wah-wah pedal, which my father was co-founded with the first recording of the wah-wah pedal on the moon, which was actually a bassoon. It wasn't even a saxophone. It was a bassoon, or it wasn't a clarinet. It wasn't a guitar. It was a bassoon of all things. And it was called the Wah-Wah Doozy. Anyway, I put that up on the moon. And so all of these things, now they're part of a project that's called My Moon EXP. And it's an exhibit and an experience. And my whole background has really been around Web3, NFTs, meme tokens. We just launched our fourth collection that sold out. Very excited about that one, called Synthtopia. And you can go to synthtopia.world and look at that one. Really interesting project. But I love the whole concepts of Web3 and circular economies and the power of tokens. The whole world's about to get tokenized. The whole world. I mean, even today I saw Larry Fink from BlackRock, right? We can talk about BlackRock. That's a different story. But the point is that organization basically said that the tokenization of the world is 11 trillion. It was either 11 or 16 trillion dollars of an industry. The whole world's about to get tokenized. So part of my whole thing is the concepts of tokenomics, circular economy. So this, we created a painting, which is called the Golden Mullet. Now we're back to the mullet, right? So the Golden Mullet, which you can check out at mymoonexp.com, and you can look at the Golden Mullet. But the golden mullet is actually a picture of me with my mullet, kind of a side view that was taken in the studio years ago. And what we did is we reconstructed that thing with pixel art. So it is holding all 7,000 pieces of the stuff that's on the moon is in that art. So you think of that piece of art is like a, it's like a time capsule. Right. Wow. And it has a lot of things and stuff buried into it that are going to be gamified over time. And a big part of it is half of the money we're taking it to Art Basel, and my good friends and my pals over there at Bit Basel, which is an incredible group of people. It's like, these are the digital pioneers that are making things happen. Have a huge event at the Sagamore Hotel in Miami, the 2nd through the 8th of December, which is called during Art Basel Art Week, you know, the Basel Miami Art Week. And so there, we're going to be doing, and the Golden Mullet is going to be going there, and it is it's going up for bidding. And basically the thing that's interesting about it is it's going to be inscribed as a Bitcoin ordinal. And so this will be, it'll be tied on the blockchain to the Bitcoin network. But what's interesting, it's also going to be tied to half of the funds that are raised. It has a, right now the piece has a starting price of $2 million, right? And the big part of the reason is 1 million of that 200 of that money of that 2 million will be embedded into the artwork. So the value of the piece of artwork, that NFT, will have $1 million valuation at the time of inscribing, when that happens, whatever, that'll be the timestamp of what, how much Bitcoin that is, but it'll be tied to that. And that becomes a yield generating property, right? So now it's not only the value of the piece of art and what it is in the place, it's kicking off, you know, every month you're getting a yield on $1 million worth of Bitcoin. So the person putting in is really just buying the half of those funds are going into this thing. Now, then there's also currently about 35 derivative works that have been built by a whole series of very famous artists and folks that have taken the Pink Floyd photos and created new derivative works of my pieces, which are all part of that. And so the guy also will have the ownership of parts of that. So there's, it's a business, right? And then what's interesting is I break this thing up into 50 pieces. So I have my my artist takes it and takes the digital asset, breaks it up 50. We print out all 50 of those pieces. They're all unique because it makes the piece. Those are blown up to a certain size. Then I have people and artists and people paint on those. And then what we do is we mint those right there as NFTs. And then now we're partners. So we now jointly own the NFT. So we're partners at that time. And then I take those and that particular NFT, I create 10 more NFTs out of that one. In other words, those are all, they're just, you know, it's 10, you know, this is one of two, two of three, or it's, you know, different colors, you know, a little lightly changed, but it's your artwork. And then those all get built and they create a new mullet, right? And those new mullets then become are part of the event that day that happened. So the idea is that this then the poster, so that creates a whole new, looks like the mullet, but it's themed based on the very first one was Bitcoin 2024 Nashville. So it has a Bitcoin theme, but it's the same mullet, it's the same thing. The point being is it creates a circular economy of secondary markets that can be valuable. So now as me, as a patriot or somebody, if I come in, I've got 50 of those. So those are 50 are for sale, right? And those could be, you know, $1,000, all right? So I pay $1,000, so I get to paint on one of those things, right? But now when I leave, I get the physical painting that I had framed, and I now have 10 NFTs that are part of the project. So they painted on top of Pink Floyd and the moon, and they're now part of the moon. Now, the kicker is I was just fortunate enough. I just got the call. The space program people called me and they want to take 22 people back to the moon. And I get to be one of those people that is going to curate and bring and put all this stuff up there. And so I'm going to take each of these mullets. So each of the mullets, so everybody that creates these are going to go back to the moon. So it's a circular moon economy.
A circular moon economy, which why the website is mymoon, M-O-O-N-E-X-P.com, and that's where you can find the golden mullet. Scott, you're brilliant. I haven't heard of I've heard a lot in this field, but I haven't heard so much of what you just shared that is even possible, or the ideas around it. And what people don't know is probably they haven't heard it either, because you're inventing a lot of this and you're very much involved in the technology and all and the creation of this kind of thing, not just for yourself, but for other artists. And so thank you for that. I would love to talk more about that, but it's going to have to wait for another time.
No problem.
We are up on time.
Perfect.
But needless to say, if people can't already feel it, you're excited about the future.
I love the future in the sense that, yeah, I'm excited. We could talk about AI. That's a different different thing. That's a whole story in itself.
I just like the irony of let's get the golden mullet on the dark side of the moon.
Yeah, there you go. they don't even know. And I don't think Floyd even knows yet that this is on the moon. So maybe they'll find out from your show.
Brilliant.
Yep.
And so on all the socials, I am.
Oh, yeah. My socials are all Scott Page. Yeah. IAM Scott Page. Yep. And, yeah, if you're at Art Basel, we've got on December 6th, we have the Moon Party, and it's an all day. And it's, again, a lot of all the folks that put stuff on the moon. Plus, it's a rock and sock'em thing. And then we'll be doing I'll be doing a performance there around my Synthtopia drop, which is the this NFT project. Again, what's great is you've got all these people building on top of your assets. It's like fantastic, and everybody makes money. It's beautiful. It's an incredible thing. So we'll be playing that night with Christos and myself. We've got we're making this sort of a Pink Floyd-ish kind of night, and we mashed all this crazy Floyd music into EDM stuff, and it's all tied around our thing. And so that'll be happening on December 6th. So if there's folks out there, definitely come Sagamore Hotel. It's going to be a pretty smoking night. And yeah, so those are going
on. If
you're
there, Scott, it's a smoking anything you're about. So thank you so much for smoking up the show.
All right.
what a pleasure. Until next time. Again, mymoonexp.com. You got to see this thing.
Yep,
golden mullet. Or his golden mullet.
And we've got my buddy next, right?
And we do, thanks to you, actually. But before we do that, we have the Ask Dorothy segment.
Oh, okay, Ask Dorothy. Goodbye. Am I supposed to go now?
You can hang with us and your buddy if you want. We'd love to have you.
Okay, I'll just go mute, but I'll be here.
Dear Dorothy, this is Nancy, and I've been trying to change some things by using affirmations, as you suggested I do a few months ago. However, I still appear to be stuck in some old patterns. Do you really believe that affirmations work? And if so, why aren't they working for me? And how long does it take for affirmations to work?
Dear Nancy, I definitely believe that affirmations work and that we are affirming all of the time. The question is, what are we affirming? And the affirmation isn't just when we say something positive. We are affirming all of the time. We are affirming any time we say, I am happy, I am sad, I am healthy, I am tired. Or when we ask questions like, why does this always happen to me? So let's listen to your thoughts and words you speak. And I lovingly suggest that you take a look at how often you are positively affirming and to examine how often you are affirming negatively. Positive affirmations don't necessarily work if one is saying something positive out loud or in their heads once or twice a day. And then for the rest of the day, they are affirming negatively. So yes, the affirmations are working, but I have observed when we speak that the majority of your affirmations are negative ones. Nancy, I believe that repeating positive affirmations can help shift your focus from negative self-talk or limiting beliefs to a more constructive and empowering perspective. Positive affirmations have helped me in many ways, and I'm grateful for the question as it is a reminder for me to pay attention to all of my thoughts and words and change them to ones that support me in every way. I do my best to speak and think positively, and I've asked my family and friends to gently nudge me in speaking positive affirmations if they've noticed I am affirming negatively. This way of thinking and being has assisted me in enjoying each day. I look forward to hearing how consistency with your positive affirmations works for you.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her affirmatively at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
Nice. And now for our performance segment. Award-winning vocalist, songwriter, Thomas Claxton is live with us on the Life Changes Show. Welcome, Thomas.
How's it going?
Well, you heard.
Oh, yeah. No, believe me. When Scott's in the house, it's always a party.
Did I talk a little too much?
No.
I'm a little shy. It's a little tough for me. And, Thomas wouldn't know. First of all, Dorothy, I love you. She was awesome. That is so important because, you know, it's really about just shifting your perspective, right? And what she's talking about, that's an incredible tool. Affirmations are that tool. I love her for that. That's fantastic. Thank you, Dorothy. And then back to Mr. Thomas. Yeah, Thomas and me have been buddies now. How many years have we been pals now? Well, how long?
Man, a good handful of years. I mean, we played our
good handful of years. We've now been playing gigs. We've been doing duos together, and I've been playing in his band. And he has this incredible called the Me, I'm what is it?
Me, myself, and us.
Yeah, he has a whole festival he does up in, and he just has incredible acts, man. He just had all the guys from, Steve Ferroni, guys from, you know, Letterman shows, from some of the greatest rock stars. I'll let him tell about it. But anyway, Thomas, and you asked me, you said, who would be a good guy? And I said, this is a great guy to have here today. So I'm actually very excited to listen to my brother play here.
Well, us too. And actually, before we get into that, you went ahead and mentioned it, Scott, me, myself, and us. Sounds like a kind of a concert series that could tour. Tell us more about it, Thomas.
Yeah, the Me, Myself, and Us concert series, it was kind of funny how it started. It was something I kicked off as kind of a response to the lack of work during the pandemic, you know, because I had been doing stuff outside of my hometown for quite a while. I had done some arena stuff and toured with some different people, and you know, it was a great time. But whenever I would come back home, it was just one of those things where, you know, everybody was so used to seeing me at the local spots that, you know, it was not a big of a deal, you know. So I'd come back home and nobody really cared that I had been working some red carpet in LA or New York, because, you know, they could see me any day of the week. And but when the pandemic hit, I remembered that there was a time period, as we all know, where the lockdowns happened, and musicians were like the last, I'm not saying just musicians, but people in the entertainment business were the last people to go back to work, pretty much. And, you know, because understandably, in some ways, we were not considered essential. And, it was one of those things where I was like, you know what, I'm not going to be kind of at the mercy of, you know, somebody else saying I can work or I can't anymore, because that was a rough time period for so many people, not just me, and everyone, really, for those of us who remember. And so I started selling tickets to do I would go rent out a place, and I'd sell tickets for my original music. And I stopped playing all the local places. We're not all of them, but you know, 90% of them. And just did ticketed events, and every two or three shows that I would do, I was like, you know, let me treat the audience to something really cool. So I brought in some friends of mine who I had worked with in the past, and the first special guest was Larry Mitchell, Grammy Award-winning guitarist who had played with Tracy Chapman and Billy Squire and Rick Ocasek and, you know, people like that he had worked with over the years. And it got a great response. People loved to see Larry. It was a nice change up. And I brought in my buddy Will McFarlane, who was the guitarist for Bonnie Raitt and the Muscle Shoals Swampers. And then I was like, okay, now I'm going to try this in a bigger venue. And that's when I called my buddy Scott Page, and I called our mine and Scott's mutual friend Tony Franklin, and our other buddy Kenny Olson, and I was like, let's try this in a band type of setting, you know. So we put everything together for that, and we threw it out there. I felt kind of bad for Scott and those guys because they were kind of the lab rats for that show, you know. I had never done a band.
Good friends, I'm sure.
Yeah. I was like, Scott, you guys are going to go through some crap here, man. But bear with me. Let me test the waters here. You know, and
yeah, but it was great, dude. You killed it, dude. That was the thing about your events. I just going to say, you always took care of everybody really well and stuff. And being a business guy, because you know, I love business. I've had 5 businesses. I'm all about business, and seeing you, the way you handled your business and what you did was always pretty mind boggling. And you did a great job. Even on the ones we did, we found a few little tweaks, and you were off to the races, bro.
Yeah. And I basically told Scott and Tony, you know, and Kenny pretty much goes along with anything. Scott will tell you, Kenny's like so chill, but I've told Scott and Tony, cause I knew they would, you know, be real with me about it. And I was like, listen, tell me what I need to improve on here, and let's make this a thing, you know. So after those guys, I brought in Bernard Pretty Purdy, and who is one of the most recorded drummers in history. He's the only drummer that I'm aware of that has a actual rhythm named after him, which is the Purdy Shuffle. And and then we brought in Carmine Rojas from David Bowie's band. And during these band editions, I kept doing these Q&A sessions. And the Q&A sessions oftentimes got like just as big of a response as the performances did. Mm. And because it turned into a thing where people were kind of getting like a music history 101 lesson with a concert. Like, you know,
nice.
We know you know who Pink Floyd is. We know you know who David Bowie is and James Taylor and all these guys. But there's a lot of magic that happens behind the scenes. And you might not be aware of some of these guys. Let me introduce you to, you know, Leland Sklar. Or like we recently had, Steve Ferroni, the drummer of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and Duran Duran, like Scott mentioned earlier. And we brought in Will Lee from Paul Schaefer and the CBS Orchestra. And it was really interesting to hear people's feedback. And people would, I would get countless messages almost every time from people who attended who would say, I'm not looking at this music the same way anymore.
Mm.
You know, there was a big lesson learned there's in a good way. And it's almost like I'm hearing this for the first time again.
Wow.
You know, and it was really interesting because a lot of the guys like Scott, they have some of the most interesting stories because, you know, they have the unique view of being in the middle of it and kind of off to the side of it just a little bit, just enough, you know, because some of those guys get so busy. And like David Bowie's going 90 million miles an hour, and a guy like Scott working with Pink Floyd he's got the most amazing stories, and he remembers so many things. You know, one of the stories I always thought was great from Scott was the fact that, you know, he got the call, and Scott, tell him about the Pink Floyd thing, man, because that's
oh yeah, real quick. So playing with Supertramp, and Dave Gilmore came to guest on the record, right? And so I got to talk to Dave. I had him come down. He came down to my gig that night. It was just down the street, Studio City, place called Josephina's. And we had, you know, it was Skunk Baxter, and it was Sklar, and Michael Finney, a killer band. And so Gilmore came down and hung and played. And we hung, and next week I had this event, so I invited him out. So he came out to this thing that I did with this 40-piece band of all-star thing at Guitar Center. And then 2 days later, you know, I get a call. He calls me up, or the next day he calls me. He says, oh, would you come put some solos on this record? So I went and I played on the record, and it was great. And I was, you know, it was a whole long, I mean, I don't want to drag out too long. But comes one, the part that was interesting is after doing this, playing the solos, blah, 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 blah. I get a call from Dave a few days later, and he's like, oh, we love your solos. He's an English guy. He's like, oh, I would love to join the band. We're getting ready to tour. We're going out for this thing in 2 years. And I'm like, oh, you know, I don't know. I said, let me get back to you. Right. I said, so, and then I call my buddy up and I go, dude, he says, I went and I played on this Pink Floyd record. And he says, what? You played on a Pink Floyd record? I said, yeah. I said, I went and put 2 solos on this record. Right. A couple solos. And I said, he was like, wow, that's freaking cool. And I says, then there's the guitar guy. And he goes, Dave Gilmour?
The I guitar said, yeah. guy. Yeah. I love that.
The guitar guy calls me up, right? And he goes, what? You Dave Gilmour? I said, yeah, yeah. And he says he wants me to take and join the band. He goes, dude, you got to do that gig. And I said, dude, I don't know anything about this band. I knew zero. Zero. I swear to God.
Let me just summarize that really quickly. Let me summarize that. Scott Page almost turned down touring with Pink Floyd right. because he didn't know much of who Pink Floyd was.
And the story is so deep. One of these days we'll tell the full story, but yeah.
Those are the kind of stories I'm talking about.
And yes. Well, he goes back to what you were talking about today, standing a point of view, right? Yeah. It's that point of view. You're like, how many people stand up in front of audiences and get to feel that point of view? You know, for me, the excitement was all, you know, obviously it's incredible, the crowd. But for me, it was like, holy shit, I'm standing next to Dave Gilmour. Right. Yeah,
who he did. That was the, like the guitar guy.
Oh, once you figured guy. Out who the guitar guy was. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I did fast. Well, trust me.
The thing is like
very, very fast. I figured that out.
This series is loaded with stories like that.
Yeah.
And nice.
And it's turned into something really special. And to go on a little bit further with that before I get to the songs here, I got approached by Mrs. Dinah Gretsch. Who is
wait actually before we do that let's get the song in because I want to make sure your fans get to hear it within the hour.
Okay, great.
So let's interestingly this song
the song that that's called Wondering About Tomorrow.
Oh,
and yeah, I figured I told you I'd change it up on you the last
okay
totally going for it, but this song there's a question in the song where, you know, it sounds kind of gloomy, but at the same time, there's a realization that happens in this song, and a positive outlook is seen at by the end of the song. So,
I wrote this. Can't
about
wait to hear
forward
it.
To things and kind of
yeah, man.
Is this now? Is this
at the end of the tunnel?
Is it recorded already, or where is this in the in
this
the mix?
One? I haven't recorded, but I'm happy to announce that I just got a. The ball rolling on my next album. So Scott Page is required to be on. He just
yeah. Well, we get to have a preview here. This sounds like a world premiere, and it's going to be live. Yeah. Thomas Clark Claxton is performing live. Wondering About Tomorrow here on the Life Changes Show.
Like the words of a song in the evening, can the sky fall? Could it end it all without knowing? I knew a girl who fell from her world, and she's still falling. Time forgets all, we stumble and fall. Is it too late for the saving? Sometimes I wonder what happens to you when you're sleeping. Sometimes I cry, does the sun shine when you're breaking? Sometimes I run, sometimes it all feels so hollow. Sometimes I wonder, what's the point of tomorrow? At the end of the day, you You watch the lights fade, but there's nowhere left to run. And the blackened sky helps the sun shine, shine on, shine on. Don't throw away the meaningful days, 'cause you won't find what you lose. There's no return when it all burns. Be careful what you choose. Sometimes I wonder what happens to you when you're sleeping. Sometimes I cry, does the sun shine when you're breaking? Sometimes I run, and sometimes it all feels so hollow. But sometimes I wonder, what's the point of tomorrow? What's ahead for tomorrow?
Thomas Claxton.
Woo!
Indeed, thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Doing me proud, brother. Doing me proud. Yeah.
Sound okay that time?
Yeah. Sounded fine, man. You killed it. Andy, yeah, man. Great singer, dude. Love it.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Thomas Claxton. I'll spell that C-L-A-X-T-O-N. Now, you could go to Me, Myself, and Us. That series he was talking about, that's a website, that's his website, Me, Myself, and Us, all spelled out, .com, and find him on socials. What's the best way to reach you on socials, Thomas?
You know, I still love to use Facebook and Instagram, that kind of stuff, you know, but if you go to facebook.com/Thomas Claxton Music or look for Thomas Claxton Music on Instagram, I'm still on all that. So that's the ones I love using the most. And,
okay.
Of course, I'm on X as well, so you can find me there.
Well, I have loved everything you said, and you said something that other people said that I just can't leave hanging out there, because I know you don't believe it and you know I don't, and that is, some people thought that musicians were not, what was the word? Essential. I actually think they're one of the most essential groups of people in the world. But that being said,
music. Music. Right? We're basically at the quantum level. We're a damn vibration. We're a note. It's perfect music. We just align with that vibration. It's awesome. Yeah.
So that being said, we obviously all agree how important music is. And, you know, interesting to me, when I was looking at your work, Thomas, and I the words that came to my mind, but like, he's a working musician, like he's working all the time. And then I later learned you do like 200 concerts a year and et cetera, et cetera, and work with all these people and record and all that. Interesting that actually there was no opportunity for you to even get to this place. And somebody actually said something that, well, you tell us.
Oh yeah. Well, it was the journey to music to me was always a, it's been a rewarding one, but it wasn't easy. So, like, you know, I grew up in Southeast Georgia, which I have no regrets about. I love it down here, and that's why I still live here. You know, but at the same time, being a musician growing up was not exactly something that that was smiled upon. Not because people didn't like musicians, it's just because, you know, people were, especially in the small town I grew up, they didn't think that there was much of a future in that business because, you know, the stigma is it's, you know, very few people get to be, you know, successful musicians as far as making money and all that kind of stuff in it goes. It's considered something you do, you know, like a flash in the pan kind of thing, and very few people go past a certain age of doing it. And, or at least that's the, that's sometimes the misconception. So when, I remember when I was a kid in high school, you know, we had career day. Do you guys remember career day?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they let you, basically pick, you know, someone that you kind of want to shadow that day that's in the field of choice that you might want to be in one day in the future. And when they asked me about that, you know, they said, well, you know, what do you want to do and who do you want to spend the day with that day? I said, oh, I already know. I want to spend the day with my buddy Brad Adams, who taught me how to play acoustic guitar because I'm going to be a rock musician. And instantly, you know, it was kind of like an eye roll situation. The principal basically told me that I had a snowball's chance in hell. Those were his exact words, by the way, of ever becoming a successful musician. Even though I was involved in the music programs and everything, you know, at a very young age. And I remember there was even a parent-teacher conference because they were concerned about my future aspirations. And
wow.
And the teacher looked at my mother, one of my teachers in high school, looked at my mother right in front of me and told my mother that I was living a pipe dream. It wasn't going to happen, you know. And I kind of use that for fuel to the fire, if that made sense. I don't like making something so negative be what fuels the fire, but at the same time, that was kind of the natural way of it. And I used it for a positive thing. And
your music, but for others.
Yeah, it turned into something, you know. Like, I remember later on, that same principal one time reached out to me, it was funny. It was after I had done my first arena tour, and I was on the road with Chuck Negron from Three Dog Night for a little while there. And this principal reached out to me through an email and basically said, you know, hello, Thomas. Here at South Effingham High School, we like to celebrate our alumni who have gone on to have successful careers. And we would like to get the local news team here and put your picture on the wall of the school and celebrate your accomplishments.
Wow.
I probably shouldn't have done it this way, but I don't.
Oh, no.
I told him, you know, basically where he could shove it. And I told him no, because I was like, you know, one day when you retire, then I will consider that again. But I won't do it while you're there because, you know, you tried everything you could to discourage me from following that path.
Wow.
And, you know, I just didn't think it was the right thing. But then years later, fast forward to, you know, when I changed things up with the Me, Myself, and Us concert series, we had a show in December of 2023. And prior to that show, I got a message from Miss Dinah Gretsch, who I mentioned earlier. And, She is one of the owners, along with her husband Fred Gretsch, of that Gretsch company. You know, the ones who make Gretsch guitars and Gretsch drums, and one of the most widely successful brands to ever exist in the music industry history. Period. And you know, so she said, you know, I like what you're doing with your concert series, and I would like to attend your upcoming series event, which was happening in December of 23 that year. And then I would like to speak with you afterwards. So, she came to the show. She emailed me afterwards again. We set up a meeting, and she said, you know, Mr. Gretsch and I are the namesake of the Gretsch School of Music at Georgia Southern University. And I've been looking for a way to bring artists like Scott Page and, you know, people like that and to the school to speak to our students and give them good career paths and good advice, because it's not just a performance school. Like, they teach like things about the music industry and the business side of things. And she said, so I would like to partner with your concert series. And if we do this right, it'll be a good opportunity for everybody, and it'll be a great thing for the students.
Wow.
And I was instantly on board because I had been looking for some sort of a way to, you know, kind of not let things happen for other students that are up and coming in today's time, you know, happen to them what happened to me. I didn't like that. And, you know, it was just one of those things where, you know, this was like an instant fit. It was a natural fit. And nice. So we started that partnership, and now all the guests like Scott and Steve Ferroni and Will Lee here recently from the CBS Orchestra, you know, they've actually gone and they visit the class, or some of the classes. They've been in the music industries class and the songwriting class, and they've spoken to these students, and it's just been so impactful for these students. So the opportunity to do that through my concert series, and, you know, I cannot thank the Gretches enough for, you know, this opportunity they've given me, because it's really something, you know, you get opportunities, and when it impacts your life, that's great. But when you get opportunities and it impacts the lives of somebody else, that's even more powerful, in my opinion.
Nice. That's beautiful, Thomas. Thank you for sharing that. Is there a website we might want to give? Well, is it the me, myself,
and
us?
It's me, myself, and us.com.
Okay.
And you can go on there and check out everything about the series, and, you know, see what it's about. And I've got some more things that I'm going to be announcing very soon. I can't quite put an announcement out there just yet, but if people stay tuned to the website, it'll be announced in the very near future, something we're going to start that'll benefit the students in January and going forward. So,
well,
it's exciting stuff, man, because, you know, it's really cool to be able to bring these guys in there, because those are,
yeah,
speaking to guys like Scott,
yeah,
they were not opportunities I had growing up.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that just because of my situation like that. Getting that close to guys who had done things on that level is pretty rare.
Even today,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, like a typical, and this is what I've tried to do. With the Me, Myself, and Us concert series, I've tried to do something that's not a standard concert. Like, you know, you buy a ticket for an arena show somewhere, you're in the nosebleed section for the cheapest ticket, and you're so far away from them, there's no kind of interaction. You're just going in there, you're listening to music, no different than what you'd probably listen to on the radio. You know, you get in the car when it's over, you leave. The artist gets on the bus, they leave, nothing else.
Mm.
And, you know, without paying for like a VIP package that costs, you know, four times the amount of money as the ticket did. You know, and right. So with this, because of the connections that I've made over my career, thankfully, you know, I'm not just approaching these guys in a lot of situations like with Scott. I'm not approaching him as a promoter. I'm approaching him as a friend and as someone that I've worked with over the years. And it's an easy thing to talk more relaxed and more natural and tell them what I'm trying to do. And then they get an opportunity to go in and like, you know, it's an opportunity for the kids to listen. That's true. But it's also an opportunity for these level of performers to give back in a different kind of way. And, you know,
nice.
I cannot stress enough, you know, how if people want the world to change, they better start with the youth.
Yeah.
Period. Like, that's the future. That's where it starts at. And going forward, that's the most impactful thing. So if people want to change things, you know, I remember I read a book one time called The Four Agreements, and it's such a great book. And, you know, and one of the things that, you know, that they talk about in this book was the fact that if things aren't going right, then you just have to acknowledge the fact that they're not going right because you made some sort of an agreement in your past that puts you in the situation, an agreement with yourself that puts you in the situation that you're currently in. And of course, that's not you know, for things that you can't help. But if you want to change things, then you simply have to make a new agreement and go forward and do things in a different type of way and be impeccable with your word and things like that. And, you know, that's how people have to do things. A lot of people like to complain these days, and they do a lot of talking and a lot of complaining, but the action is very important. And I think, you know, going and conversing with the students and everything, and that's a great place to start if people want to see some change in every facet of life, the music industry, the economy, which direction the world is going in general. You know, it all starts with the up and coming generations, in my opinion.
Well, Thomas, thank you for sharing that. I trust that people have heard both you and Scott today and have been touched by what you've shared. And we'd like to be touched by one more song if possible. And I'm just wondering, is it the one I was thinking?
It is. It's
the one. Oh, it is. Okay. So
I figured I'd save that one for last. Because,
all right. Well, this is interesting, actually, because this one has a story, and it also has a story in that it started before the pandemic, right?
Yeah, I started recording this. I actually laid down the initial tracks at Capitol Records out there in L.A. And my buddy Phil Hilborn, who played with the London musical We Will Rock You, was with me on those sessions. And also my buddy Francesco DeCosmo was in these sessions also. And it was a lot of fun doing that. But then, you know, time happened and the pandemic hit, and you know, it just kind of got sidelined for a little bit. And but recently, like I said, I'm moving forward with the new album, and mine and Scott's mutual friend, Mr. Leland Sklar, has actually laid down some bass tracks for this.
Nice.
And Steve Ferroni from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers is going to be playing drums on this one. So it's exciting to get this thing out there, and it's basically a story about you know, sometimes you get knocked down in life and somebody special comes along and helps you stand back up. And, you know, so it's really acknowledging the fact that not only does life knock you down, but, you know, sometimes we all need help getting back on our feet.
Well, this is going to be very special, especially since it started a while back, and you're going to finish the recording, and here we are in the middle, and you're giving us a sneak peek and an unplugged version. Here is Thomas Claxton and his song Help Me Stand, live on the Life Changes Show Online Edition.
Here there's a storm raging, could be heading my way. So I'm moving on before it all fades. Life is unbelievable when it throws you to the ground. Life is unexplainable, it'll show no mercy you down. There could be stars falling in the middle of the day, but I feel your arms around me, I can't look away. That faith is undeniable, your soul lifts me from the ground. But time is unreliable, 'cause it'll show no mercy when you're down. And you help me stand free of everything. You strengthen me in ways that I hoped I'd feel again. You help me stand. You take away my pain and seeing me a side of what still can be excitable. And I'll always know that you helped me stand.
Good job.
Thank you.
Well, I was that Scott? I don't want to interrupt Scott saying,
you
good
know
job.
Me. I never stop.
You don't let me interrupt.
Never mind.
Thomas, thank you for that. Thank you for putting a tear in my eye and making me think of all the people that helped me stand. Thank you so much. That's beautiful. Can't wait. Well, you shared it. It's yeah, perfect
it's
the way it is.
It's exciting to get that song out because it's interesting too. Cause when you write music, sometimes you might start off with one thing in mind and then, something else kind of happens and it kind of changes meaning. But that's just me as the writer, because a lot of the times people will take something away from music when they're listening to it that you didn't exactly deliver it as, you know?
Right.
Like they get a different meaning of it. And I've always thought that was an interesting thing, because I wrote that song about someone that I care about, you know, very much, especially in the past. And you know, but it went another way because that went another route. So, you know, but, so it's kind of a bittersweet song, but it's still a song that I enjoy. And, I'm looking forward to getting it out there, especially with some of the guys that are going to be on it. It's going to be exciting.
Well, exciting indeed. And let's give out your, again, me, myself, and us, and is all spelled out, andus.com, and then find Thomas on Facebook at Thomas Claxton, Claxton music, and he's on Instagram, and we have his links at the Life Changes show page for him, and we have actually a clip from his concert series, but you could find him. He's all over. He's literally all over. So and we're glad you are, Thomas.
No, dude, it's great to travel. It's great to work with amazing artists like Scott. And, you know, I got to say, people...
especially Scott.
Especially Scott.
Especially
Scott. Was that Scott?
Yeah, definitely Scott, believe me.
Especially but, Scott.
But, you know, I get asked all the time. I get asked all the time what me, myself, and us means. And it's just like it sounds. I mean, you know, like I said, when I started that series, it was about, you know, it was about something I wanted to do for my own career. So there was the me and myself part of it. But the us is not only the artists that come on board with this thing, but it's also everyone who's supporting this, because I know that, like a lot of things in life, you can't do it by yourself. You got to have a team. You got to have a group of people that believe in what you do. So the us is everyone, you know, and any of the supporters of the series and my career in general, that's who the us is, and that's where I got the name from.
We all need an us. So thank you for sharing that, Thomas. And speaking of us, probably a special thank you for today, but for quite often, some of the great people we have on this show is thanks to our executive producer, Mark Lejeune, and the relationships that he has with them and the trust that they have of him to
thank you, Mark.
Join us on the show. So a special thank you to Mark Lejeune and Scott Page and Thomas Claxton. You know, I have fun on the show all the time, but tonight was off the charts. Off the charts, and hope we can do it again sometime.
That's
soon.
Absolutely. So happy to hear that. I knew Thomas would come in and make me proud, and he did. He was good.
Thank you, brother.
It shows I got some pretty good taste.
We'll need to do it live from the moon one day.
from the moon, Brother Mark. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, with that, that's our show. That's our show. Big thank you to Scott Page and to you, Thomas Claxton. And on behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com. On Facebook at The Life Changes Show and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.